Okay, then we move on to management commentary.
Kick off on this one, if I may. So, thank you. We have two papers for you today. 15B on business model, which Yelena will take you through, that asks for comments but doesn't ask for any decisions, and 15A on enhancing characteristics, which does ask for decisions. The paper on enhancing characteristics follows on from the discussions we've had in July and September. This paper covers comparability and understandability, including cross-reference, and that makes up the bulk of the paper. However, we also ask you for decisions on verifiability and timeliness in the practice statement. In each case, we are proposing a plain language description to bring the characteristic into the practice statement if it's not already in there in the existing statement, and then additional text to address gaps in practice that we've heard during our outreach. So dealing with comparability first, which is paragraphs 13 to 19 of the paper, the issues we have heard during outreach have been around the diversity of calculation of metrics which apparently have the same name, inconsistencies in calculations of metrics by the same preparer over time, lack of sufficient track record to interpret trends, particularly where these are trends relating to longer term factors, and sometimes inconsistencies with other published information by the preparer, and including forecasts prepared by the preparer or targets. So in undertaking our research, the staff looked at what had been done in other frameworks. Perhaps not surprising, comparability was identified as a desirable characteristic in many, but there was limited practical guidance in the frameworks. I think the two notable exceptions to that were in integrated reporting, which provides guidance on comparison to other organisations, and in the Canadian guidance, which provided guidance on comparisons over time. So taking that into account and the issues that we heard, we have four recommendations. So A is the plain language explanation of applying comparability in the practice statement. B is a clarifying statement to emphasise that the characteristic of relevance should take precedence over the characteristic of comparability. We don't want comparable information if it's not going to be relevant. Then C addresses specification of consideration of users' needs, and that's users' needs to make comparisons across industry, across time, and to forecast information, and consideration of the need to make comparisons to other company information. Then recommendation D proposes requirements over the selection and presentation transparency of information, and that addresses assumptions behind the information, identification of changes in assumptions over time, highlighting of new information. It addresses the need to consider longer comparison periods where applicable, And it addresses the need to explain any divergences or inconsistencies with other information published by the entity. So with that, if I can take you to question one, does the board agree with those recommendations on comparability?
Tadeo.
I fully agree with the staff's recommendation. The only thing that I would like to clarification is on the term, on the question, you can go to the question if you want. On letter D, 5, consider whether information presented in management commentary is consistent with information reported elsewhere else. I'm just wondering whether this is the best verb to describe, because most of it includes, explain, states, highlight, and then consider. It's a bit more.
So introduce a bit more imperative in the.
Yes, I think it would be better if we use another.
Ensure.
Yeah.
I think ensure is too strong. But consider, though, I thought about it. What does it mean?
Yeah.
Explain why. If it's different?
No, because you want them to try and be consistent.
Be positive.
Right?
We're trying
to encourage consistency. Mm-hmm.
We want to encourage consistency, but recognising that there may be exceptions where it's appropriate to have changed the measure, but in that case, we would expect to see an explanation of that. So I think it's, as you say, it's finding a stronger word that doesn't.
Endeavour that.
Endeavour?
Endeavour that.
Endeavour, that is that good?
Endeavour.
Endeavour.
Yeah. That, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
That's one of
try.
The words that people say. It's easy to translate this in your country.
We could probably find less than drafting, but we take your point. I think this is the spirit of what we're recommending. Yeah.
Try hard.
A couple of small things. Is, when I read just 5, D5, it strikes me that would apply beyond comparability. Should that not apply generally? I'm just wondering why it's, or are we tacking it on everything?
So this is D5. Could you give me an example of
where
you might think?
Well, this is all about comparability. And then it says, consider whether information presented, it could be entity-specific, could be any type of information, should be consistent with other documents. I'm just wondering about the location under comparability for what seems to me like a general thing.
Well, I suppose from our point of view, it sort of falls logically under consistency and comparability discussion. But then again, where guidance is located in the practice statement, it's more of a drafting question.
Anyway, there's a small, so that was one point.
Okay.
The other one was just on, if I do D1, is common industry metric, whether we want to just allow that there are other things in industry that may be common. In other words, I might do comparability based on something other than just industry measurement.
So not a metric?
Well, no, you could have a metric, but it might not be based on industry measurement, or based on industry, where I'm located in an industry.
Then you say it is not a, it asks to state whether or not.
So I say it could be a common metric, but not an industry metric.
Yes, so it could be a subject matter metric.
Something like that,
So commonly applied metric rather than common.
And I wouldn't leave the industry out, but it could maybe industry and or whatever other, because there are a lot more dimensions you can compare entities than industry. So I think,
thank you.
I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you. So I think there's a lot to be welcomed here. So comparability over time is important, building a track record of any information that's consistent with other communication documents. we may struggle with comparability between entities. I mean, after all, this is through the eyes of management, so I think we have to retain a degree of flexibility there. The main question I have, though, is on D3, and I really wonder, so this is highlighting where new information is provided on a matter in the previous management commentary. Can that really be operationalised? I would be expecting a lot of new information in each annual management commentary, and I just wonder whether, you know, in theory we end up with footnotes or highlight. I mean, I'm just not sure how realistic that is in practice, is my only question. I don't know if I'm thinking the same way you're thinking, or you're thinking of something.
I think we're seeking to address the situation where a new measure is used, or an alternative measure is used, and another measure perhaps is quietly dropped.
That would be, if you formulate it like that, it's much clearer.
Exactly. Yeah, it needs to be more precise, I think. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Point, and I can live with that. Yeah. Thank you,
Mary.
Couple things. One is a generic observation. I think Nick, in past discussions, has warned us about speaking too much in our language rather than the language of non-accountants who, you know, and I think you've struck the right balance in terms of picking up the characteristic of comparability, which is our language, but then giving more a plain English description of what that means. And I think overall that should be the approach, because the words that have great significance to us are for those like us, and it will link it back to the conceptual framework. But I think the expanded discussion avoids us assuming that people know the implication in our world of those special terms. So I think it's the right way to do it. And then a specific comment, and I also was focused in terms of question one on D1 and whether it's a common industry metric. It wasn't Tom's point about metric or not, but rather that could be seen as placing a lot of burden on a company to form a view about what is common and do a lot of research. And I think, well, I get the point about we're trying to encourage people to think about comparability. I think I'd express that aspect of it a bit more is identify any known difference from established either industry or other sector practices. So kind of call yourself out if you know you're taking a different approach, rather than by saying you have to determine whether you are in line with common practice could require an awful lot of work in a highly regulated environment to reach that conclusion.
So I think we need to be careful with the drafting
It's a drafting rather than a disagree with asking somebody to think about it.
I like that word, known. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's some useful drafting suggestions. With those, can we support this staff's recommendation?
13, one absent.
Okay, if I can now take you to understandability, which is covered in paragraphs 20 to 44. So I think the important point I'd make in opening is we've previously discussed the idea of narrative coherence and how that supports a coherent story and linkage across the commentary, across the content of management commentary. And we've also discussed the application of materiality, which supports greater focus and less boilerplate. So actually, probably the two biggest contributions we have to make on understandability have already been discussed. However, there are some other aspects of understandability to be considered. So the existing practice statement identifies that management commentary should be clear and straightforward, consistent with the financial statements, and avoid duplication and boilerplate. Our recommendations A and B deal with the retention of that guidance and inclusion of a plain language description of understandability. So then the remainder of the paper and our recommendation C deals with cross-referencing. Now, this is probably quite a long discussion to reach a relatively simple conclusion. What type of information would might be cross-referenced in the management commentary? Well, you might have cross-referencing to financial statements, to remuneration disclosures, to industry regulatory filings, or social responsibility reports. We draw a distinction in the paper between cross-referencing and what we call signposting, that is signposting to information that would not be material in the management commentary but might be of interest to another user, and referencing to sources, for example, where an entity publishes a market-wide statistic and quotes the sources of that statistic. So the discussion on cross-referencing is not intended to cover those two situations. What were the key considerations on cross-referencing? Firstly, to note that there are a variety of approaches to whether cross-referencing is permitted and under what conditions nationally. We heard in our discussion concerns over the possibility that cross-referencing could lead to fragmentation and give rise to concerns over the status and quality of information that was being cross-referenced. And we also heard quite commonly that referencing within what people describe as an annual report would be a good solution. However, we've noted the feedback from the Principles of Disclosure Project that identified that identification of an annual report was problematic because of different definitions. So the staff looked at three options. Firstly, to prohibit cross-referencing altogether, but we also recognise that referencing to the financial statements, for example, is generally regarded very positively. Option two would be to stay silent on the matter. Our concern there would be that to do so might lead to excessive use in some situations. Or option three, which is what we're proposing today in recommendation C, would be to permit cross-referencing but subject to certain conditions and safeguards. So those conditions are identified in paragraph 44, that the information would have to be available on the same terms as the management commentary, filed with the same regulatory authority, and that management would take the same level of responsibility for the referenced information. And the safeguards are set out in paragraph 43, that is that the part of the document that was being referenced to should be precisely specified. The information should be current, but that if it relates to a different period, that subsequent events should be explained. And where applicable, if the information is provided in digital form, that there should be what's been termed a digital link back, i.e. if you link into the other document, you should be able to link back to the management commentary from it to aid understandability. So those conditions and safeguards are covered in recommendation C. Question two then is, does the board agree with our recommendations A on the retention of existing guidance, B on the use of the inclusion of a description of understandability, and C on the use of cross-referencing? Sue?
Yes, I do agree with your recommendations here. Just a couple of one question and one comment maybe on the cross-referencing part. So I like the idea of the cross-referencing, and it's good that we've dropped the reference to annual report, given the feedback we got before. That's good. Couple of questions. One was, when we went out with the principles of disclosure discussion paper, we had this idea in there that people could use cross-referencing, but not to the extent that it sort of caused, I don't know, fragmentation, I think was the word that we used. Are you thinking in this document, because of some of the other principles and understandability, et cetera, that we've got, that that's sort of addressed elsewhere? That was my first question. And then the second one, I don't know if it's a comment or a question, is in paragraph 42, just this very specific point on the recommendation in the last sentence that cross-referencing must help avoid duplication. I'm just conscious of the fact that I think that in some jurisdictions they're hoping that even though we don't plan to make this a document you have to apply, that they would like it to be enforceable when it comes into their home jurisdictions. And I'm just wondering how you enforce must help avoid duplication. Like, do you have to prove that it would have been, had to be included in the document if you hadn't got the cross-reference? I mean, do we really mean you have to avoid duplication, or is that sort of an objective?
I think that perhaps is overly strongly specified as drafted here. So we would need to be careful on that. And to answer your first question, yes, the concern over fragmentation is something we feel we have covered.
So I guess we don't want the management commentary to end up to be 5 pages of cross-references.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
It's actually in the same sentence, yes. Sue, that we're trying to capture, yeah. That, but again, maybe we need to work on must.
Anne? I agree with staff recommendation. I think this is a little bit difficult. Area, and we have been hearing a lot about it since the days of the principles of disclosure. And I think you've endeavoured to get a middle ground with what you've got in paragraph 43 and 44. And one question I do have for you is whether there's been any discussion through your consultative group or your other means of outreach about how this could be approached from people that are using automated techniques, because we know that management commentary is really important. And we know lots of aggregators and others are reading it with machines and extracting information from machines. So what are they going to do when they come to the cross-reference that then goes to a remuneration report or something like that? Has this come up in any of your consultations?
So we have had discussion on cross-referencing in a digital domain, but the point you specifically raised hasn't come up. And I think maybe there's an opportunity to raise that with our consultative group again.
Yeah, it doesn't affect what we're deciding on today, but it just
you
makes
would
me
imagine that it shouldn't be too much of a problem.
No, I suppose they'll have a tag that says reference, and then they'll have some procedure for then
they'll just follow the link.
The document.
Yeah. That's how their search Mary? Engine's working.
But again, comments about the word, I think more wording than maybe a bit more than wording, but broadly supportive. The first one is retaining the existing requirements. So paragraph 23 says, you know, kind of the equivalent of be good and stand up straight. But, if I look at be consistent with related financial statements, I see why we want to start with that presumption, but I can also see why a management commentary that might introduce other information would add value rather than it would be part of that relevant entity-specific information. It might be constant currency information that's not in the financial statements, or it might be disaggregation or pro forma that provides information about a particular event that may not meet the definition of unusual. So I think it's looking at how we express that in the context of thinking about relevant information. That's one thing. Now, the second, and it goes to cross-referencing again, I think you picked the right one of the three possibilities. But if I focus for a minute on an issue we face from time to time about the interaction of our projects with different regulatory regimes, I think we may want to think about expressing this, about addressing that boundary. Because I think that if we are permitting but not requiring, our permission cannot override, should not be able to be argued to override a local regulatory prohibition on cross-referencing. And I think if it's a jurisdiction that's adopted IFRS standards, it would be harder if it were in a standard for the jurisdiction. I think some people would say, well, if IFRS standards gives me permission to do this, then that trumps your local prohibition. And I think we have to make it, I think this is an area in which we should defer to local regulation. Having said that, I think we also would need to make it clear that if a local regulation permits cross-referencing without satisfying the conditions that we set out in paragraph 44, it would not meet the conditions of the management commentary practice statement. I don't think we have to write endless legal requirements, but I think we have to think about the interaction with regulatory regimes so we don't create conflicts between this and guidance that might exist locally about cross-referencing.
I think that's important. Yeah.
Martin.
And I think we should be silent on this cross-referencing because a little bit like Mary, I think if this practice is not mandatory guidance. So for example, if somebody is not using or cross-referencing a different way, what is the consequence? I don't know. Well, if a local regulator, I think, allows cross-referencing, which is different, I think, what is then the consequence? You cannot say, okay, it is in compliance with our practice statement. But I think it's not necessary because I think it is not mandatory guidance. Therefore, I think it is not necessary. And especially since this 44B, the reference report must be filed with the same regulatory authority as a management commentary. And why should we give that restriction? I don't know. Because it is, I think, in the competence of local regulators, let's say things.
I think the reason we're concerned about it here is because we are anticipating that the management commentary may, whilst not a mandated part of IFRS, may become a mandated part of a national regulatory regime. So I think we don't, as staff, we didn't want to feel we could duck the question because the practice statement wasn't mandated.
If the German security regulator allowed the bank to use a kind of management commentary but make reference, if it is a bank, to the banking regulator, it is not in compliance with our practice statement, do we want to have that consequence? I would not care, really, to say that. Because there could be situations where it is maybe appropriate from local regulators to make that, but why should we be so harsh on that? I don't know. I think we should be silent on that, because it is not mandatory. And our objective is that local regulators using the practice statement and incorporated in their own law, and therefore we should leave this kind of formal things to them. That is what I think.
Well, I think the danger covered in the paper is that there are jurisdictions where there is no guidance, and if we were to allow it to go uncontrolled, that would be perhaps a worse downside than if...
Is it really so probable that people who take the effort of following our management commentary practice statement, that they would make abundant use of referencing?
I think where the danger arises is particularly in relation to corporate social responsibility reporting. So many corporates prepare separate social responsibility reports. They may, as we've highlighted before, touch on areas that are applicable to the management commentary, but not address them in a way that we would expect management commentary to. Wow. And so I think that the number one concern in this area is that type of reporting.
So a couple of things. First on duplication, I agree. I think this is a guidance statement and referencing is going to be critical. And I think the distinctions you make between signposting and the case where you avoid duplication by a cross-reference, I like that.
I think in your paragraph 42, it's important when we do an ultimate write-up. In that last sentence, we've got basically two things. Principal states incorporating information by cross-reference must help avoid duplication. It could almost be one sentence. Then must not hinder understandability and neutrality of management commentary. And that's one of the reasons I think it's important to do this is because, you know, if you think of a case where they just do a whole pile of cross-references to a bunch of documents that are written in totally different style, there's not going to be understandability. And I think it's important that we say something. In fact, I'd even think about when you do it, it's excellent that you say precisely specified. I would even have a concern about, you know, even the style of writing may be so foreign to the way the management commentary is written that it may not be understandable. So I think we need to do something. I think you're on basically right lines, and we should just be really careful in writing it. I also had, just going back, one small comment on concise. I note that the practice statement doesn't say concise. Conceptual framework says clearly and concisely. Practice statement says clear and straightforward. Straightforward and concise are not synonyms anywhere I looked. So I think it would be really good to do conciseness, but I think I would take a look at that package and see if you can say something more. And in particular, I note paragraph 28 where the MCGG people said, guidance on communication principles such as understandability and conciseness. I think they meant something more than just avoid duplication and something more than straightforward. So again, not knowing exactly how to write this, but I think we need to say something more than just encourage conciseness. I think we need to maybe elaborate a little bit on what that is.
So don't just lift the existing drafting on that.
Adele?
Just assuming that we would allow the cross-reference, and I believe it's good. I think that we can save some room in the report, avoid duplication. I just would be silent in relation to the digital link. I think that maybe we are going further. I mean, that we just should refer to cross-reference, but without, for example, talking about a link back. I think that here we are maybe going too much. I know that might make a difference in terms of more the age of users than the type of users, but I don't think that we should go further in this point. Just say cross-reference, and I like the principles in 44. They are good.
Yeah. So, digital link perhaps is a bit technical for the practice statement.
I think that we went too much here.
Gary.
Thank you. I rather like the guidance in paragraphs 43 and 44 that the staff has outlined. I think it's workable. I think it's practical. Sort of thinking what Martin had raised about should we be silent, I think when I look at paragraph 41, we're saying it's permitted. We're not saying it's required. And I don't see how, if we permit it, that doesn't get in the way of any local regulator. They can permit it, they can prohibit it, but we're not requiring it. We're just saying if you can do it, and if you want to do it and say you comply with our practice statement, these are sort of the boundaries. On the other hand, there's nothing that says you have to cross-reference. You could write the thing from page one to the end of your commentary with no cross-referencing, saying, I believe the document should stand alone, period, and just be readable from page one to the end of the commentary practice that we're giving enablers to help you with your communication, but you don't have to do them, but we allow it to do so if you want. I think it's very, very workable in there. I think if someone's going to take the time to write one of these things when it's still a voluntary document and absent regulatory requirements, I think we can anticipate most of the time it's going to be a pretty good professional document because, one, they don't have to do it. They're only doing it because it's useful for them to do. And there's all sorts of other places in your annual report. You can just put a list of other places to find information. You can put in typically the back cover where the contact information is and the list of where your operating operations are and so on and so on. You can just put for additional information. The ESGs are here, see our foundations are there, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is a very good staff set of recommendations in 43 and 44.
Mary?
One thing I forgot before in responding to two comments, I'll pick up on Gary and Martin about being silent. I don't, about cross-referencing, I do not agree with being silent. First of all, you know, Martin's absolutely right. You do not have to do management commentary in order to say my financial statements are prepared in accordance with IFRS standards. But I think, you know, again, if somebody wants to say my management commentary has been prepared using the management commentary practice statement, we should have conditions attached to that assertion and, you know, what our expectations are. And if a jurisdiction wants to adopt it as a requirement with modifications, then they're going to have to call it something other than ISB management commentary. So I think that's one reason not to be silent. I think another reason is, you know, we realized when we started the discussion of cross-referencing in terms of financial statements in the disclosure initiative that I think it's helpful for financial statements that we discuss it explicitly in the conditions here under which it's appropriate, because if we just stayed silent but there was a general expectation that cross-referencing is okay, it might send the message that cross-referencing is okay generally unless, you know, prohibited. And I think we kind of ended up more in the disclosure initiative on the basis of cross-referencing is permitted, is okay when it's permitted by, you know, by the standard. And I don't want to have inconsistent signaling on that point between the management commentary document issued by us, even if not mandatory, and the standards issued by us. So I think we should address it. And maybe, you know, to Tom's point about duplication, avoiding duplication not being the only reason you'd cross-reference, I think we can just have a straightforward observation that cross-referencing can be helpful to avoid duplication of information, which overall enhances the understandability of the package of information provided, just in terms of what, you know, what's the role of cross-referencing. And then the third thing is coming back to something Martin focused on in paragraph 44B. What you are proposing is that you can only cross-reference to reports that are filed with the same regulatory authority. And I think that what that means in practice is if you, let's say, are a financial institution and you want to cross-reference to some disclosures made in your banking regulatory filing, unless you take that filing and also file it with the market regulator, if that's a different body, you could not do that cross-referencing. Now, I think if that's – I wonder if we want to be that strict or if it's really just about the equal accessibility. And so if, you know, if you are cross-referencing to a document that is restricted access with the regulator, that's not – with the banking regulator, that's not very helpful. But if it's a document that is freely available, then – and as long as it's available on the same time scale and same terms, mm-hmm. I don't know that we'd want to say you can't cross-reference to that unless you file that also with your securities regulator. So just think about whether we really want to be as rigid as 44B.
And one addition to that, because if you don't have to file your management commentary with the official body, mm-hmm. you cannot cross-reference. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. You can even not cross-reference to your annual financial statements if you don't file your management commentary with the official body. And do we want that?
Okay. I don't think we want to cover that.
But a good point. Rika?
Yeah. I agree with what Mary and Martin said right now. And I also have a shared view with Tadu on digital available information. Because I think the information itself shouldn't be updated after it's released at the same date for the information published. But in the digital world, if the kind of the program is updated, in that case, every single link between one document and another should be updated and should be current. So I'm not sure we need to get into that far.
So I think concerns again about the practicality of the digital link suggestion.
Okay. Nick?
Sorry, just quickly on that. I'm just reflecting on the feedback to the POD DP. Reams and reams of paper encouraging us to get more involved in digital reporting. And we try and take one small step here, and it's kind of it's knocked us out of court. So it's just an observation.
Okay, can we support the staff's recommendation? Well, yeah, subject to drafting suggestions.
Well, two absent.
It was largely supported.
Okay. So if we can move on to verifiability next. These last two are the analysis is, and recommendations are much shorter. So we'll try.
Nice and timely.
So on verifiability, this has been a repeated area that we've heard stressed during our outreach, the importance of verifiability. However, we have also heard concern that verifiability could be become an obstacle to disclosure. So we needed to be clear that we are not requiring assurance over all information. In relation to the risk that verifiability becomes an obstacle to disclosure, we highlight that the discussion we had with the board on freedom from error, but the board didn't vote on in the September meeting, would address that point by requiring judgment to be distinguished from fact and requiring information on the sources, limitations and assumptions of any judgment-based information. So that would those sources and limitations and assumptions might be verifiable. So the staff recommendation on verifiability, again, is for a plain language description of verifiability to be included in the practice statement, to require facts and judgments to be distinguished, and to require explanations of process, sources, limitations and assumptions behind any judgments, and then thirdly to retain the statement that assurance is not mandated through the practice statement. So that takes us to question three and whether the board agrees with those recommendations on verifiability.
This discussion is very brief indeed.
Just one point, and I agree with the recommendation. I would want to make sure that we are not going to have multiple requirements for providing judgment assumptions. We have that for comparability, we have that for... And every time we...
Martin.
You want to avoid duplication.
When I'm struggling with this on question B... B1 is distinguish or requires management to distinguish information based on judgment from factual information. And if you think about our financial statements, there's a lot of judgment, a lot of factual, and always to distinguish, I find it difficult, really, to say. I understand what you want, but in practice, to doing that.
So we need to be more careful with the drafting than we
and if, for example, if you would thought. Require that for a financial statement, you would say mine level 3 is is judgment, and level 1 is factual, and all this kind of, would you want to do that? Because a lot of preparation of this is a kind of mixture of judgment and factual facts, and then you want to provide information based on both, but always to distinguish, I find it difficult.
You might ask to make clear which parts of the annual statement are to a high degree dependent on
adjustments. Yeah, that's the idea. Well, yeah.
Who's a link question of stress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Hans, just to that point, one of the things that you might be trying to pick up on is things that are management assertions, so the equivalent in narrative of a management performance measure, something that's a management assertion as opposed to something that is a verifiable fact.
Well, I think that a very big, large extent of the management commentary is of that nature. So,
hence the difficulty if there is a lot. So even if you started with the fact was revenue this year compared to revenue last year, and then you started talking about why revenue changed, straight away you've got those two things blended in there. So I'm not sure how they can.
But I also don't know how you would distinguish it, you know.
I think the situation we're seeking to address here would be where management is including, for example, an approximation of an impact or an estimate of what part of the business is exposed to a particular trend. So I think there are words we might be able to use to sort of narrow that down so that it's not interpreted as broadly as Martin suggested.
Okay. All right, yeah, but I'm also not sure if it is practically possible to distinguish everywhere.
Think about it.
Okay, with these considerations, can we support a staff recommendation?
13, one absent.
Question 4.
Okay, that takes us to the final question on timeliness. So, at the moment, we have no guidance in the practice statement on timeliness. I mean, we expect that a management commentary would be confirmatory of more timely information published by the entity, but we think and we've heard that it would be most useful if published with the financial statements. So the staff recommendation is that we should recognise timeliness in the practice statement with a short plain language description and state that information in the management commentary is most useful if published with the financial statement. So not require it, but just prefer it.
Nick?
I mean, stepping back, it feels sometimes as we've been going through this exercise to tie in the qualitative characteristics and the conceptual framework to the management commentary that it's a bit of a stretch on some of these. And I felt that now and again, not just today, but in some of our previous discussions as well. And I wonder if there's a bit of a stretch going on here. I mean, it's almost obvious that do we need to say that? And I just ask whether we're being driven that this has real meaning or simply be driven by a neatness of fitting everything with the conceptual framework.
Our own view of completeness.
Indeed. I'd prefer that it was driven by a real, always, whatever it is, this one or any of the others that we've discussed in previous board meetings, is driven by genuine requirements rather than a neatness of fitting with the conceptual framework. It just caused me to pause, I think, on that basis, really.
Françoise.
I think I came to the same conclusion, but basically thinking, well, why make that here when it is just an encouragement, and that basically this is regulated locally? So is it going to be really? I mean, of course, I can't disagree with it, but I'm not sure it's going to have a lot of impact.
I think I would agree that it's probably unlikely to change behaviours. Mm-hmm. I think to the sort of broader point, there is benefit in bringing the conceptual framework ideas into the practice statement, because whilst it doesn't have to be audited, if it were being audited, it is helpful to have something to point at in terms of the challenging the information in there. And you may have a situation where a management commentary is so out of date that through not being timely that it would be inappropriate to publish. So I think there is some merit in having the guidance in there, but I do sort of understand the point. It's not major.
Can we move on, Mary?
I just was going to say, thinking about it, I think we are succumbing to the checklist mentality in terms of these are the characteristics, and we are bulking up, we're potentially bulking up the management commentary, so I'm going to make the radical suggestion of saying delete it.
Okay. Oh, Mary, yeah, I like that. Shall we ditch it? Or, well, who can support staff's recommendation as it is? Okay, ditch it.
Ditched.
How many was it? That was six.
Six, yeah. That was almost enough.
Okay, so just that, make one quick comment.
Oh, sure.
I basically agree. When I'm looking at B, though, it still seems to me, whether we tie it to the conceptual framework or not, it's reasonable to say that it should be published reasonably closely to the financial statements. I don't see that doing any harm. And for places without regulation, it's a useful reminder that it shouldn't be much delayed. So I just think that's a useful sentence.
So that takes us to 15B on business model, Elaine.
It should be on time.
It's a big topic we are starting.
A business model, yes. You saved the best for last.
Yes.
So this agenda paper 15B, we are starting the discussion of guidance on content elements. That is on those topics that are expected to be covered in management commentary to meet primary users' information needs. The content element we are introducing today is business model, and the main purpose of this paper is to provide the background information about the research we've done on the topic, and to introduce the issues that the board will need to discuss in developing proposals on business model for the revised practice statement. So what we started looking at is, first we looked at the existing guidance issued by the board on business model and related notions of business or business activities. Paragraphs 7 to 14 of the paper explain that the existing practice statement identifies information about the nature of the entity's business as a starting point for understanding the entity's performance, strategy, and prospects. It also suggests broad types of information about the business that management may consider including in management commentary. The conceptual framework and IFRS 9 link the nature of the entity's business activities or its business model to producing cash flows for the entity and address interaction between accounting treatment and the nature of the entity's business activities or its business model. It's probably worth noting that IFRS 9 focuses on specific types of business model, that is on those for managing financial assets of an entity. We also looked at a recently amended IFRS 3 that provides a definition of a business and identifies inputs, processes, and outputs as elements of a business. Then, because the revision of the practice statement is intended to promote management commentaries that better meet information needs of primary users, we've explored what those needs of users are in respect to information about an entity's business model. And our findings are summarized in paragraphs 17 to 19 of this paper. We looked at the findings of the work done by the FRC reporting lab on investor needs related to business model disclosures. The lab's report notes the importance of business model disclosures as a context for the annual report and states that improvements are needed in linkage and consistency between information on business model and other information included in the annual report. It also indicates that investors need broad information to give them understanding of the business, that is, what the entity does and how it is structured, but they also want enough detail to understand what is unique about an entity, what it depends on for its success, and whether its business model is sustainable. Our discussions with the board consultative groups indicated that important gaps in current narrative reporting practice relate to lack of information about business model. For example, the members of the Management Commentary Consultative Group indicated that descriptions of business model provided in management commentaries sometimes lack detail, focus, or information about sustainability. And in particular, they noted that key features of how the business operates are either not described or overgeneralized, that key drivers of the entity's success are not identified, and that key business resources and relationships, including intangible ones, are not described. So to find possible solutions for addressing these gaps, we looked at other standard setters' guidance on business model, and the summary of our findings is in paragraphs 20 to 28 of the paper. So firstly, we looked at how standard setters explain what is meant by business model. And although the term itself is commonly used, we noted that few standard setters explain what it actually means. Where such explanations are provided, they most commonly refer to value creation or similar notions. We also looked at the findings of the Integrated Reporting Council's research into business model definitions. And their review of academic literature indicates that those definitions most commonly refer to value creation or ability of an entity to generate revenues or returns. They also refer to an entity's purpose or to the elements or components of business model. And then we looked at the guidance provided by the standard setters on the types of information that entities should include in the description of its business model. And here, the level of guidance provided by standard setters varies. And we included some examples of disclosures set out by other standard setters in paragraph 26. We also discussed our initial proposals for guidance on business model with the with Management Commentary Consultative Group. As explained in paragraphs 29 to 30, they largely agreed with our initial proposals, but notably they raised questions and comments on particular aspects of our initial proposals, and those were in relation to the link between business model, value creation, and cash flows, the link between business model and the purpose of the entity, and the prominence of guidance on intangible and ESG matters that could affect the prospects of the entity. With that in mind, in paragraph 31, we have identified the questions that we think the board will need to consider in developing proposals on business model for the revised practice statement. They relate to explaining what an entity's business model is. In paragraph 32 to 49, we explain that this term can be understood differently by different people, so explaining what the board means by business model would be helpful. And in doing so, the board would need to consider whether the explanation would refer to value creation and generating cash flows, whether it would refer to the entity's purpose, and finally, whether it would be helpful to identify the elements or components of business model and what those components would be. The next question that we think the board would need to consider is whether to set out an objective of describing business model in management commentary, and if so, what that objective should be. In paragraphs 50 to 54, we explain that we think that such objective would be helpful and could help explain the intent behind the requirement to describe an entity's business model. It could prompt management to consider whether disclosure related to business model as a whole meets primary users' information needs. Finally, there is a question of which types of information about an entity's business model should the guidance discuss to address the gaps that we've identified in current reporting practice. And we provide some suggestions in paragraphs 50 to 59. So at the moment, we are developing our analysis and recommendations on these questions. What we'd like to do today is to ask whether you have any comments or suggestions on the discussion and analysis in this paper.
I think that most businessmen, when they think about their business model, is probably that it means, how do I make my money? Mm-hmm. And you can call that value creation, or you can call that future cash flows, but that's, you know, if you are on the capital markets, if you stop making money, then it's game over at a certain point. And so I would make it as concise as possible and as concrete as possible, and I think this has a common understanding around the world. I would be careful with the link to purpose, because when a company describes its purpose, it usually has a, you know, good component of making the world a better place, which is fine, but I would, it's much broader and often, you know, has a high degree of political correctness in it. So I would be very hesitant to make that part of the business model. You might be able to explain the business model a little bit, but I would really concentrate on how does a company make its money, and also questions of the sustainability of the business model. I would, you know, that's a separate issue, the whole issue of sustainability. Will be an important part of the management commentary, but I would really.
That's how does it keep making money?
Yeah. And that's a separate question. Yeah.
But related.
So I would really and then you have the question of the financial sustainability of a company also has to do with the environmental sustainability in some respect, but I would really. Keep it precise. This, I think, most businessmen understand very well what a business model is.
So tying it back to the primary users as well, because that's what they care about now.
Yes, and I
to the cash flows.
Yes, I think just providing that link to cash flows gives us the assurance that we're not going to stray too far away from the objective of the management commentary, but. You know, where I think we'd want to discuss concepts like value creation are then in giving people the information on the business model to form a view as to whether that cash flow is sustainable.
Well, is it, will you really make money? And are you going to be able to keep making money?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Value creation is a precursor of the cash flows.
Yes.
I would see them as very intimately linked to each other, not something different, really.
Yeah.
Nick?
I agree that the focus is definitely on value creation, cash flows, and the sustainability of that going forward is I guess, the focus for investors. This paper covers an awful lot of ground, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do justice to it today, and I think I would need to step back and have some time to unpick the various elements of it. I think what's clear is everyone agrees the concept of business model is central to management commentary, but there's no real agreement on what's meant by it particularly. I'm not sure it was drawn out of here, but often there's a discussion about what's business model, what's strategy, are they the same things? And probably we need to give some thought to that. I know you've got a paper probably coming on strategy at some time in the future. For me, a key point differential, and I'm not sure it came out in the paper, is between business activities, and I think the way the business model was expressed in the paper was often in terms of an individual business activity, and I'm interested also in the business model of the entity. So for the entity, it may be that I have one very mature cash generative business that's funding another business in high growth industries, which is very cash consuming, and that's the entity's business model, whereas often here the flavour I got from the paper is we were very activity-based, almost segmental or business unit-based in terms of activities. Now, there are business models within each of those activities, but I'm trying to think about, I'm investing in the entity, so I'm interested also in the business model of the entity. Why does this package of businesses make sense together? So I think that's something, and it may come through in terms of strategy.
That can already make it more complicated if there are really several business models within the company.
My business model may be to have a diverse range of businesses within my group. That may be my model.
All the more reason to, I think, separate questions like what is the sustainability of my business model. I think that should be a question later on. Otherwise, you know, the danger is that the description of the business model becomes almost the whole management commentary.
I think the ambition behind this paper was that there would be enough information in the business model description that if a part of the business were to fail in the future, then that would have that part of the business would have been visible from the business model description, so you wouldn't be blindsided by it. But the discussion of whether that part of the business might or might not fail would be covered in a separate content element around the entity's operating environment. So I think, as it stands at the moment, we would draw the sort of line between providing a foundational understanding through the business model and then the wider discussion of, is this business sustainable, which fits somewhere else.
Yeah. Anne?
Thanks, Hans. Around about paragraph 44, you start talking about the elements in the business model. So following on from the comments we've already had, you're making a starting point really with IFRS 3, the idea of inputs, processes and outputs. But I was very interested in your work here where you talk about impact, because I think that's going to be a really important part of it, because what I'm hearing in conversations and in prior meetings, the value here coming from the management commentary isn't just describing input, process and output, but thinking more broadly about impact. And I think that will tie in really well to the sustainability of the cash flows that we're talking about. So I would encourage you to keep on going with not just a model that is an IFRS 3 model that stops at input, processes and outputs, but also thinking of the impact element, because I think that's what people are looking for.
So what do you mean by impact here?
So to illustrate there, you might have a negative impact where perhaps the business is polluting a local river, so that could lead to the business activities being curtailed. Or you might have a positive impact where the business has a competitive advantage because it's making its customers happier than anyone else can.
I have heard the term impact related to, you know, impact investing, which is improve the world investing. And so it's a bit of a term which comes with a lot of connotation. I'm not sure if we should use the term.
Okay.
Mary?
I have another. Just as you were questioning use of the word impact, I was questioning use of the word sustainable, because you know, we're coming late to this game, and other people have taken all the good words. If I look at the discussion in paragraph 18, I think two things about B in the discussion of whether the business model is sustainable. I think first of all, in any discussions we have like this, we should be talking about providing information that allows the user of the management commentary to determine whether it believes that the business is sustainable, not asking the company to make assertions about, you know, sustainable. And now I'm going to ding myself for using the word sustainable in that context, because I think at this point in the evolution of company reporting, the word sustainable automatically brings many people to thinking about environmental issues. And so while this is absolutely perfect use of the word sustainable in a plain English sense in paragraph 18b, I think we should try and find another word when we're talking about
financially sustainable or environmentally sustainable. Where,
right. Modifiers, but if there's another word.
It's too confusing to just say sustainability. Yeah. Okay. Good. Is that all?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
You made some progress. Thank you very much. We take a break till 1:45.
Quarter to four.